Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University Audio Presentation of the Month. This monthly CD and web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. We all make our livings selling something to someone. It's not a matter of whether you sell or not. It is only a matter of how good you are at it. All sales success is based on three basic principles that are covered in this presentation. Since 1992, Monty Lewis has helped companies from across the country create strategic business advantage by developing the skills and performance of their people. Lewis & Associates consultants work with companies to enhance their sales activities and improve their leadership effectiveness. The foundation of Lewis & Associates is respect for the individual. By being responsive and flexible, Monty and his team have created a long-term legacy of helping others achieve their goals.
This is Monty Lewis, and welcome to this audio session on three keys to effective selling. We call this effective selling because we're looking to increase our effectiveness, our likelihood of getting the results we were looking for. And sometimes this may not be the most efficient. Efficiency has to do with getting the most done in the least amount of time. Effectiveness has to do with getting your desired results. This reminds me of the story of the tortoise and the hare, and we know the lesson from that fable is slow and steady wins the race. We all make our living selling something to someone. The question is whether we're planning to be good at it or not. I believe that selling is the oldest profession. And then the other day, someone told me that something else is the oldest profession. Now, I believe that profession is just merely a subset of selling. We're all selling something to someone. Whether you're selling your ideas to your peers, or selling your boss on getting a raise, or selling your kids on doing their homework, or your spouse on taking a class on ballroom dancing, if you want to get good at selling, then follow along with me and take some notes as I share a couple of models and thinking ideas on how to improve your effectiveness as a seller. We'll cover a number of ideas in this audio session, but the three keys to effective selling are to plan in advance, to be client-focused, and to take responsibility for action. These keys are simple to explain, but sometimes they're hard to do. And you know they work because you've seen them work in your own life. First, we'll start with your attitude, because we know your attitude has a big impact on your success when selling. We say the first person you have to sell is yourself. How you feel on the inside will impact how you perform on the outside. If you're feeling ineffective on the inside, you're just having a bad day, then how are you supposed to perform well on the outside? Sometimes you need to reset your mind by changing up your physical space, like going for a walk, so you can shake off the negative mindset and be ready to approach your clients once again. Now, unfortunately, for many, this idea of selling has a bad reputation. What people think about when we discuss selling is, you know, the used car salesman or telemarketers selling magazine subscriptions. And many chose their profession because they didn't want to be put in a position to have to sell anything to anyone. And yet we know that we all make our living selling something to someone. Let's reframe this idea of selling as helping our customers. Let's move it from doing something to our customers to doing something for our customers. And for that matter, if you have information and ideas that can help your customers, you would be doing them a disservice if you did not share that information with them and try to influence them to take advantage of your ideas that can help them. But we have to do it effectively. We can't just hit them over the head with a 2x4. Rather, we have to finesse our conversation so it comes across as if it was the customer's idea in the first place. Now, the starting point of being good at something is how we feel about it in the first place on the inside. What if we don't feel it? What if we don't have the motivation? Well, we know that our feelings drive our actions, that how we feel on the inside will determine how well we perform on the outside. Well, the opposite is also true. Our actions can drive our feelings. that we can literally act our way towards feeling good on the inside. You know, I'm supposed to go for a run on a regular basis to stay healthy. Often, I set the alarm for 6 a.m., and when the alarm goes off in the morning, how do I feel? That's right, I feel like hitting the snooze alarm. But sometimes, I don't, and I pull on my shorts and my sneakers, and I head out and go for a run. And although I don't initially feel like it, within a few moments, I feel terrific. I feel strong, I feel powerful, and I'm delighted that I kicked myself out of bed. And so I literally act my way into feeling. You can literally act your way into feeling. So if you don't feel like it, just act as if you do. And soon your actions will drive the feelings that you desire. All right, so now you've managed your feelings, and this single idea will improve your effectiveness as a seller. But also, there are dozens of other subconscious cues that you're sending out to your client, whether you speak to them face-to-face, or over the phone, or by way of your email messages, or if you send them to your website. You're constantly sending them subconscious cues. And they all have tremendous influence over how your client feels about you and your recommendations. We say that everything counts. Everything that you say or do will either help you communicate and positively influence your customer, or it won't. Nothing is neutral. Everything counts. Now, customers pick up on all these subconscious cues, the quality of your website, or the thickness of the paper stock of your business cards, or whether you use complete sentences in your email correspondence, or how you come across over the phone. This is why we ask customer service reps to place a small mirror next to the phone in their cubicle. This reminds them to smile when on the phone, because their voice sounds better, more friendly, when they smile when speaking on the phone, even though their customers can't see them. Everything that you do is either pulling you towards your goal of positively influencing your customer or pushing you away. How you dress, did you put on your favorite tie, or did you shine your shoes? Is your hair cut? Are your nails done? Everything counts. Nothing is neutral. Also, be mindful of your body language. People are looking for congruence between your words and your body and your vocal quality. Make good eye contact. Lean forward as you speak with them. Nod your head and say, as you listen to them. That congruence, a match between your words, what you say, and your tonality, is an indicator of trustworthiness. It's what we look for when we watch politicians on TV, or when we're interviewing someone for a job, or it's what our customers are looking for when we're making our recommendations to them. It happens at a deep subconscious place, and people feel that either they trust you or they don't. Now, here are five more ways to build this trust bond with your clients. Number one, you give them unconditional positive regard. No matter what they say or do, you pass no judgment. We've all seen some crazy things in our job, and by this point, it would take quite a bit to phase us. But no matter what they do, we pass no judgment. Just say, wow, or amazing, because these comments pass no judgment. You're thinking, wow, you're crazy. But outside, you just say, wow. You pass no judgment. Number two, give them courtesy and respect. Say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. Is it okay if I put this down over here? Do you have time right now to go over this? When you use courtesy and respect, we earn their trust. Number three, be on time. People are very short for time these days, and being on time means I respect you, which earns their trust. We're particularly bad about this with our internal customers, by the way. Your meetings should all start and end on time. You'll be surprised at how effective your meetings start to become when you decide right now to start and end all meetings on time. Number four is listening. Listening earns people's trust. Indicate you're listening by feeding it back to them. What I heard you say is, sometimes that's all that people need. Unfortunately, not a lot of people are being listened to right now. And if you just listen to your customers, you will earn their trust. And number five, do what you say you're going to do. This is the essence of trustworthiness, when your deeds match your words. All day long, we make little promises, and then we follow through on them. I'll call you at 10 a.m., or I'll email that to you right away, or I'll send this package to you by the end of the day, or you'll have the report by the end of the week. All these little promises are how we earn their trust. And when you follow through on all your little promises, people come to know that you are trustworthy, that your word is as good as your deed. All right, so you've managed your feelings and you're paying attention to all the little physical cues. What's next? We need to have a process. We need to have a plan to be effective sellers. Every profession has a methodology, has a standardized approach that improves their likelihood of success. Whether you're a physician and you follow a standard approach to treating patients, or you're a pilot and you consistently conduct a flight check, or you're a chef and you follow a commonly accepted system of managing the kitchen, each profession has its own process that improves their likelihood of success. Similarly, effective sellers follow a standard process to engaging customers. This process is known as consultative selling, or solution selling, or counselor selling, or customer-centric selling, because it puts the customer's wants and needs ahead of the seller's desire to move goods and services. This effective sales process has 7 steps, and the first step is we prepare in advance. Before we make that phone call, before we make that presentation, we prepare in advance. We gather information about the client and plan out what we're going to say. Depending on your business, you may have access to all kinds of information about the client on your computer system. Or there may be publicly shared information on the internet. Or you can check out their website, or you can Google them, or you can find them on a social media site. In any case, you plan in advance. And for most businesses, we suggest that you do your homework, you do your planning 1 week out. If you plan this week for your calls and your meetings next week, then it will give you time to get access to information that might take more than just an hour to get a hold of. And if you give yourself a full week to prepare, it will allow your subconscious mind to play over the opportunity over and over again and come up with new and creative ways to approach your customer. Prepare in advance. Do it 1 week in advance. Prepare what you're going to say. Prepare what questions you're going to ask. And what are the best outcomes that can happen as a result of that meeting? Step number 2. The next step in this effective selling model is to build rapport. Make a connection. Find a place of human interaction with your client. It's important that you communicate that you sincerely care about your client. You also have to establish that you're serious. And so as you build rapport with a client, you should open up the call with a positioning statement that's intended to put the client at ease. Sometimes this is referred to as the elevator pitch or setting the agenda. This positioning statement has to be natural and comfortable for both you and the client, and at the same time give direction for your call. For example, you might say, "Before we get started, I want to share that we see this meeting as an opportunity for you to learn about our company and our capabilities, and for us to learn some more about your situation. Our goal really is to see if there is a good fit between what you're looking for and what we're good at. Does that sound okay?" Your goal is to relax the client's natural defensiveness so they understand that you're not planning on doing a hard sell on them. This bridge building or rapport building is sometimes known as the small talk, but I don't think there's anything small about the small talk. In many cultures, you can't proceed to the business part without first passing through the "who are you" phase. There's an old story about a young man walking up to the general store where there's 2 old men playing checkers over a Cracker Barrel. And the young man stops to say hello, and he looks up at the sky and remarks, looks like rain." And one of the old men says, "Nope." The other old man asks, "What's your name, son?" And the young man says, "I'm John Jones." The 2 old men ask, "Are you related to Dan Jones?" "Yes, sir. That's my father." "Well, then, Ben Jones must be your grandfather." "Yes, sir. That's correct." Yep. Might rain after all. You see, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. There is a tremendous power to the opening words that you say when first meeting with a client. You should prepare your positioning statement about your company, yourself, and your positioning in the marketplace so that they feel confident that they're working with the right kind of company or individual. Ultimately, though, what you want to do is learn more about their situation, which is the next step, number 3, determining needs. In this phase, you ask questions and listen carefully. Even if you think you know exactly what's going on and already have your suggested proposal, you might say, "I'd like to confirm what I think I understand about your situation. Is this correct? Is this correct? Is this correct?" You might find out that you don't have the full picture, and so you need to verify your information. And sometimes it's just important to have the client go through this therapeutic process of sharing their whole situation. As they tell their story, listen carefully to the details, but also for their emotions and for the parts being left out. Now, it's one thing to be a good listener and to learn more details about their situation, but it's quite another thing to motivate your customer to take action. Any recommendations that you make is going to require change, and the natural and normal human response is to resist change at any cost. Even if that change is in my best interest, that will leave me better off than I was. I prefer not to do anything different than what I was currently doing. Our mission is not to just understand their situation, but to help create the energy and the motivation to move beyond the natural resistance to change and to help them take action. What I have found is if we capture the client's strengths, the client's challenges, and the client's goals, and we crystallize those three things together, that combination of the client's strengths, challenges, and goals is a value unto itself. If you can have the client express where they're effective, where they're deficient, and what their desires are all together, then those components together are a value that provide the energy and the motivation to want to progress forward. So during this conversation, as we're determining needs, you should be investigating and verifying with regards to their strengths, their challenges, and their goals. And it happens in a more organic fashion. You don't have to be so linear in your process, but you should be taking notes specifically around their strengths, challenges, and goals. Once you've asked questions, determined needs, and you understand their situation, and you've identified their strengths, challenges, and goals, then you'll move on to the next step and make your recommendation and present your proposal. Now it's time to do some selling. You want to present your recommendation in its very best light. And because you gathered information prior to making your recommendation, you tailor your proposal to match their needs. You might say, based on what you shared with me, then my best recommendation is to do the following. It's common in many businesses to come back with your recommendation at a later time because it's not possible or it seems disingenuous to have a proposal in your back pocket right after just gathering information. One option is to separate out the information gathering or the audit process from the making recommendation stage, and we refer to this as two-stage selling. If you have the ability to do two-stage selling, then this builds trust and creates expectancy on the part of the client. Of course, you actually have to come back with a truly customized and thoughtful recommendation. All right, so you've made your recommendation, but people don't always buy right away. They have concerns and hesitations and objections that hold them back from making a commitment. This is the next phase of the effective selling process, handling concerns. The customer says, "Yeah, that's a good proposal, but it means a lot of change on my part, and I'm not sure if it'll work with the current way we do business, and besides, it's going to cost a lot of money." And if they don't voice their concerns, that's even worse. If there are normal and natural concerns, and most every other customer expresses those, and this customer is silent, what does that mean? That's right, it means they're not buying. There's just not enough trust. They're not even comfortable enough to even express their concerns, or they've already chosen another provider. One approach is to bring up the concern for the customer. A lot of sellers are afraid to bring up concerns for the customer if the customer didn't bring it up themselves. But just because they didn't bring it up, it doesn't mean they don't have those concerns. We call this preemptive strike, and it takes the wind right out of their sails. And often they're happy that you brought up their concerns. You might say, "You know, a lot of our customers were concerned about the disruption to their business during the implementation phase. Is that something you're concerned about?" "Well, that's why we use our quick speed installation process that," and then you effectively handle a concern. So, if we know that this is a natural phase of the selling process, then we need to prepare in advance. You could prepare by thinking through the most common concerns and coming up with effective ways to resolve those concerns. Or you can handle concerns by setting up an interim phase before purchase that allows the customer to resolve their own concerns. You might suggest reference checking, or a site visit, or a product trial, or a pilot, a demo, a bench test, or a user presentation. These next steps allow the customer to resolve their own concerns and move from presentation into commitment instead of going into a stall and never getting back to you. By the way, many times we've done such a good job at the determine needs phase and the present proposal phase that there's very little concerns and the customers are quite comfortable in moving forward with your proposal. In fact, if you're getting lots of objections and concerns or resistance of any kind, this means that you've not done an effective job in your needs determination phase. After you've gone through the handle concerns phase, you move into the next phase, which is where you gain commitment. Effective sellers are very good at nailing down the commitments, particularly if there are several next steps that need to come together before you finally have a sale. You might say, if this all makes sense, then the next thing we need to do is this. And once we have that taken care of, then I'll take care of all the details. Now, this final gaining commitment phase can be very stressful for both the buyer and the seller. For the buyer, it's stressful because making a commitment to your solution cuts themselves off from all other options. This is why it's so important to build trust and be client-focused throughout the sales process. In only this way can they trust they're making commitment to the right provider. For the seller, this gaining commitment is stressful because of your fear of rejection. You're afraid that at this point, when you ask for commitment, they'll reject you and your recommendation. And so you're not clear and you're asking for your commitment, and you ask for a soft, non-committal commitment. Again, if you've done your homework and you truly understand their situation, and you're personally convinced that this recommendation is in their very best interest, then be clear about your next steps and take complete responsibility for action. The client still has to do the work, but you, the seller, can take ownership for helping them get there. At some level, the client is looking for someone to share the ownership and the responsibility with them. By you making it easy as possible to move forward and being really clear about defined next steps, you're taking responsibility for action. There's a couple of mistakes that sellers make when working with their client. Number one is arguing. You get into a he said or she said experience and you can't win. I recently observed a seller argue with the client about what time the appointment was set for. The client insisted that the seller was a half hour late, and the seller had the Outlook appointment right there on his computer, but there was no winning. You can win the argument, but you'll lose the client. Even if you're factually correct, don't argue. It only reduces your effectiveness as a seller. Number two, avoid personal opinions. The three topics you're supposed to avoid in polite company are politics, religion, and sex, which I know doesn't leave very much to talk about. People have very strong opinions about these areas, and this will leave you wrong 51% of the time. If it's not germane to your topic, just avoid it at all costs. Number three, avoid knocking the competition. We all have competition. Actually, probably our biggest competition is complacency, is doing nothing, is making no changes. If you must discuss the direct competition, the other providers, then refer to them in a generic term. Try to avoid mentioning them by name. Refer to how they do business, their process, or their approach, and then turn the conversation back to your company and how you believe your process is unique, is different, is more effective than the competition. It's not classy to just throw your competitor under the bus. Sometimes your customer has done business or are currently doing business with your competitor, and you don't want to call their baby ugly. It's powerful to, as Shakespeare said, to damn by faint praise. You should say, oh yes, they're a fine company, fine people. And the number four mistake sellers can make is overselling. This is where we fall into that salesman mode where we can overpromise and underdeliver. Rather, there is the power of understatement where we are careful and even conservative about our claims. And then the client will later be delighted by the performance and their improved results. The three skills that effective sellers do then is they prepare in advance, they are client-focused, and they take responsibility for action. They prepare in advance. They don't just wing it and hope for the best. As we said, they plan a week in advance and they prepare for their calls. They do their homework and they prepare their positioning statement or their elevator pitch. They prepare their questions to determine the client needs and decide in advance what are the best next steps that will move this client opportunity forward. And they're client-focused. They view the entire experience through the client's eyes. They're less concerned with selling products and services and are more concerned with solving clients' problems. They think in terms of improving clients' performance and results and increasing clients' return on investment or saving clients' money. And finally, number three, effective sellers take responsibility for action. They understand that clients are very, very busy and they have a variety of issues that are distracting them. And so they make suggestions that are likely and plausible that don't take a lot of time that move the project forward. If you've done your homework and you've treated the client with respect throughout the process, then you have earned the right to progress your client to the next logical step. If you do all this, then you'll be sharing with them on their journey of success. Their success will be your success. And there is nothing more satisfying than sharing in your client's success. Thank you for listening to this audio program on Three Keys to Effective Selling. This is Monty Lewis, and I wish you all the best.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.